Welcome to our study of the Gospel of John here on the Radio Bible Course. In verse 22, Jesus said, "One of you will betray me." That resulted in perplexity or bewilderment. They were bewildered by what Jesus said. And the disciples must have looked at one another, perhaps looking for some expression of guilt on the face of one of them, but they all appeared to be normal. And even Judas was there, just as firm and steady as ever, even though he was the guilty one. There was no sign, no guilt, no hanging of the head, and they couldn't determine anything. Judas was not even suspected by anybody. What was Judas' problem? He loved money, but no one was aware of it. Jesus, of course, knew. Judas had pretended to be very concerned about the poor, but at the same time he was stealing from the box or the bag that they had carried their money in to buy their supplies. We saw that in John chapter 12, verses 5 and 6, when Judas said, "Why was that ointment not sold for 300 denarii and given to the poor?" This he said, not that he cared for the poor, but because he was a thief, and he had the money box. He used to take what was put into it. Judas was the treasurer of that band of men, the steward of the gang of Jesus' disciples. But he also had another treasury, his own. He pilfered from theirs and put it in his. This is the kind of a person that we have in Judas. According to Matthew's account of the Last Supper, the apostles did more than look at one another. It's in Matthew 26, verse 21, "And while they were eating, he said, 'I tell you the truth, one of you will betray me.' They were very sad and began to say to him, one after another, 'Surely not I, Lord.'" And Matthew tells us that Judas said the same thing, "Surely not I, Lord." Now in verse 23, there is an unusual description of one of those disciples. It says, "One that was loved by Jesus." Who could he be? It's a strange way of writing something, by saying the disciple whom Jesus loved. Why didn't he come right out and say who it was? Well, this has puzzled untold people, but scholars are pretty well decided who it is. Who could it be? Weren't they all loved by Jesus? Well, of course they were, but it appears that Jesus had a special and tender regard for one of them especially. Perhaps he was the youngest. Or there may have been something about the personality of one of them that just drew the love out of Jesus more than for someone else. Four more times in this gospel, in chapters 19 and 20, and twice in chapter 21, we find the same expression, "the disciple whom Jesus loved." Most scholars conclude that it was John, the writer of this gospel. And to confirm that it was John, I ask, which of the apostles, other than the writer, would have failed to name that person so loved by Jesus? If Peter were writing this gospel, and it was John, he would have said, "the disciple John, whom Jesus loved." That would have been normal. But this is the way a writer often presents something in an editorial fashion so as not to call unusual attention to himself. Further evidence that his identity as John the Apostle is the fact that his name appears nowhere in this gospel. But there are almost 20 references to a John in the Gospel of John, but it is always John the Baptist. Never in this gospel is he referred to as John the Baptist, however. He is simply called John. Now, since there were two prominent men associated with Jesus called John, would this not be confusing to readers by just simply saying there was a man called John who bore witness of Jesus? No, it would not have been confusing if the people knew who had written this gospel. And that is an evidence that we have both from tradition and from logic. People have always believed that John the Apostle is the writer of the Gospel of John, and he purposely did not use his name, but he instead said, "The apostle whom Jesus loved." Well, he must have felt that tender affection that caused him to write it this way. Now, returning to verse 23 of John 13, what does it mean to be lying close to the breast of Jesus? That's what it says in the New American Standard Version. The Authorized Version says, leaning on Jesus' bosom. Well, at one time, Jews used to sit when they came to meals. They sat at a table. But by the time of Jesus, the custom had changed and the practice was to recline on couches positioned around a table. We get a glimpse of that practice from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 7, verse 36, where we read that one of the Pharisees invited Jesus to have dinner with him. So he went to the Pharisee's house and reclined at the table. If someone came to your home and reclined at the table, you might be tempted to invite him to leave, but not in the first century. We need to understand the custom in order to appreciate what is going on here. And by the way, Christian art has depicted the Last Supper in a contemporary setting, and it is misleading. The painting of the Last Supper by Leonardo da Vinci is beautiful, but it's totally wrong in its setting. People did not sit around the table like that. Christian art, however, going back to the 6th century in northern Italy, depicts the Last Supper with disciples lying around a round table. It's in a mosaic, and that's the way we ought to consider the Last Supper. So, at the Last Supper, they were lying slantwise, stretched out, their feet away from the table, and John, according to the text, was lying close to Jesus. At this point, Peter wants John to tell him who it is who's going to betray Jesus. That's in verse 24 of our text. Simon Peter beckoned to him and said, "Tell us who it is of whom Jesus speaks." So after John got that message from Peter, he asked Jesus, "Lord, who is it?" And Jesus answered in verse 26, "It is he to whom I shall give this morsel when I have dipped it." Now I think that was whispered to the disciple he loved, so that none of the other disciples heard it. And I say that because the context indicates that the others did not really know. Notice verse 28. Now no one at the table knew why he said this to him. So they apparently did not hear what John was told, and the rest of the disciples were in confusion. Apparently, Jesus did not want to openly reveal the traitor at this point. If he did, he could have very easily said very loudly, "Friends, give me your attention. The betrayer is Judas." We don't have that kind of thing here. Even though Jesus had been blunt at other times, as you read through the Gospel of John, you certainly find him not reluctant to say it as it ought to be said. So John apparently knew the identity of the traitor, and the morsel was given to Judas. Now, what's this morsel? Well, it could have been either a piece of bread or some meat dipped into a sauce, and we know that there were two kinds of sauces. There were bitter herbs, and there were also mashed fruits. That's what they dipped in. So it was given to Judas. 1 year earlier, when Jesus had taught about being the bread of life, and he was misunderstood by the Jews, who thought he was teaching cannibalism, we are told that many of his disciples drew back and were no longer walking with him. But Judas stuck with Jesus. He could at that time have left Jesus because there were many other people who did, but all 12 of the apostles stuck with Jesus. Well, back there in John chapter 6, Jesus said something that's related to our text here. He said, "Did I not choose you, the 12, and one of you is a devil?" Think of it, that was a year earlier, to the setting of John chapter 13. He did not identify him at that time, but John, the writer of the Gospel, said he spoke of Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot, for he, one of the 12, was to betray him. That tells us that the others did not know that it was Judas at that time, but now at the Last Supper, Jesus reveals who this devil is, and he calls him that. John heard it, and he knew it, and maybe Peter knew it. That Judas should be called a devil, not the devil, but a devil, is not too surprising, because in chapter 8 of this gospel, we encounter Jesus in contention with the Jews and some of the Pharisees, and Jesus said this to them, "Why do you not understand what I say? It is because you cannot bear to hear my word. You are of your father, the devil, and your will is to do your father's desires." That tells us clearly that there are people who are of their father, the devil. So we need to be careful about the statement that religious leaders often make when they say, "We are all children of God." In a natural sense, that may be true, because God is the creator of the world. And we are all descendants of Adam and Eve. In that sense, we are children of God. But that's not the way the Bible uses the expression, children of God. Children of God in the Bible are those who have believed in Jesus Christ and who have been born of God's Spirit. They are the children of God. Apart from that, you are not a child of God. And in the case of these people, he said, "You are children of your father, the devil." Now, there are not many alternatives here. You either are a child of God or you are a child of the devil. Well, in verse 27, it says, "Then after the morsel, Satan entered into him." And in verse 2 of this chapter, we saw that the devil had put the thought of betrayal into the heart of Judas. But now he enters Judas to control this man of greed. And then Jesus tells him something in the latter part of verse 27. Jesus said, "What you are going to do, do quickly." In other words, get on with it. Move quickly. And by that statement, we can be assured that Jesus, not Judas, and not the devil, was in charge of what was going to happen. So often we think of Jesus as a victim of betrayal. Well, in a sense he was, but all this was according to the plan of God, and Jesus knew the plan of God. That's important for us to remember, because God is in charge. He is sovereign. He has a plan, and he has sent his Christ, and the Christ is going to fulfill that plan, so nothing has come as a surprise. There is no value in asking, what if Judas had not betrayed Jesus, and what if Jesus had not been crucified? The what-ifs don't lead us anywhere. The fact is, everything has been planned. The Son of God was sent into this world, and that required a sin offering, and God knew it, and he sent him here for that purpose. When Jesus was crucified, he fulfilled Scripture, the Scriptures of the prophets. It was all according to plan. The Radio Bible Course invites your questions about the Bible and your comments about this broadcast. Until next week, this is Nick Calabota reminding you that the word gospel means good news.
Our address is Radio Bible Courses, Post Office Box 14916, Baton Rouge, Louisiana, 70898. The website is rbcword.org.